This week on Potlatch, the Yukon 800 Riverboat Race. On June 24th and 25th, 12 crews began the 800-mile-long Yukon 800 riverboat race from Fairbanks to Galena and back. The first crew into Galena was led by Captain Ed Gustafson.
Would you explain how you dress for such an occasion?
Well, you just you kind of take the weather forecast and go from there. Generally, we wear some kind of underwear, long handles of sorts, and then regular clothing, and then flotation clothing over that, and rain gear over that.
What do you wear over your face and hands?
Well, everybody wears crash helmets now. I have a full face cover crash helmet with goggles, which pretty much protects my face from the rain and the weather. And this year we started using a insulated rubber glove that works very well to keep your hands warm.
You had a lot of rain coming down on you, at least part of the race. What does rain play? What kind of a role does rain play in such a race?
Well, other than the fact it just makes it miserable, it cuts down your visibility, it really isn't that much of a problem. It just works on your endurance a little more, because you're straining to see, which is restricted when the rain starts hitting your glasses or your goggles, or to where you can't read the river and see, and you just have to look harder and concentrate harder.
You've gone through almost 7 hours of guiding a riverboat over 400 miles at speeds of around 50 miles an hour. Would you explain what your body is telling you right now?
Well, actually, I'm not too bad. I feel pretty good. I'm not really that tired, other than just my legs felt cramped because we sat in a cramped position. And there's only so many ways that you can sit, either on your knees or on your bottom, and just after a while you just run out of positions to change to, and your muscles get tired and try to lock up on you.
I understand you need two different kinds of techniques for guiding on the Tanana River and then the Yukon River. Would you describe the rivers and how you deal with each river?
Well, the two rivers are geologically different. You know, the Tanana River is a what they call a meandering or a braided stream river, which is generally shallow and has a lot of different channels that are available. And these channels that you take depend on the elevation of the water. The Yukon is just pretty much a big straight river that is deep and it gives you the opportunity to run a straight line course, as against the Tanana River, which requires more knowledge of the sloughs and the channels that are in it.
Is it best to run up river or down river? Which is the best run?
Oh, I don't know that either has the is better than the other. Time-wise, it seems like that the downstream legs are just a little bit faster than the upstream, but there really isn't as much difference as a person would think, even though the Tanana runs at about 5 miles an hour, and the Yukon runs somewhere between 8 and 10.
You have an all-female crew, which is somewhat unusual, isn't it?
Well... Yes and no. It's the first time that there's been two girls in a crew. Jim Movis has two girls in his crew this year, and besides myself. my primary reason they got started was the fact that I'm one of the heavier racers that race, and so I've got to look for a light crew, and either you look for some midgets, but generally there aren't too many midgets around, or you go to some small girls, and I was fortunate enough to come up with the Binkley girls that are not only small and physically, but they're very capable on the river.
Why do you race riverboats, and how did you get started in it?
Oh, I don't know. It's one of those things you think is a lot of fun, and you just try it. I started about 10 years ago, and a friend of mine had a riverboat and needed a third person for his crew, so I decided I'd accept his invitation, and I went with him, and things just develop from there, and as you become more competitive, it takes a lot more work, and it's sometimes you wonder just how much fun it is. It seems like two-thirds of the time you spend preparing, and only about a third of the time you actually get to race.
Could you go into some of your preparations? What are the things you do?
Well, you go through your hardware completely before one of these races to make sure try to make sure that you don't have any breakdowns, but even then you have problems. I had gone through my hardware and got down to the river about an hour before the race today and realized that my tachometer cable had a bust in it, and my tack wouldn't work, and so I was frantically running around trying to find a new harness for it. Besides checking your hardware out, you've got to go out and practice and find out what your boat will do, and everybody has a pretty good idea what kind of speed you've got to be doing to be competitive and hopefully win. So if you go out and practice and find out that you're not up to those speeds, then you've got to try and determine what your problem is and resolve them. Sometimes you do and sometimes you don't.
That was an American Indian canoe song by Pete Seeger. The second captain into Galena was Bill Page, who told me about some of the weather conditions that he encountered.
Well, it gets cold. I don't know how cold it gets, especially if it's wet. I get dressed for it. As long as you got gloves on and they're not wet, and got a headgear with a face mask, and got wool clothes on, and got a scarf on, so the air doesn't suck in anywhere, you're all set.
Thank you.
music from a man who spent some time on the Yukon River, Charlie Peter of Fort Yukon, playing violin with Stanley Frank playing guitar. Bill Page told me how racing riverboats differ from the other riverboats sold commercially.
Oh, they're lighter, and they're a lot more sleek, and they're not so durable. They're durable in one way if you use them for racing, but not for banging around. You have to be careful of them. The finish underneath is real careful. You want it as smooth as you can get it all the time. And they also have what we call air traps, trap the air, so it slides, actually the boat rides on air. Hopefully, most of the time.
Mo, what is your function on the crew?
Well, I just try to help the driver whenever he needs help. Driver usually has got quite a bit. Whenever he needs to, like for instance, if he wants to look at the map or check on a fuel system, fuel lines, someone's got to hold the throttle down, so I usually take care of that. So I'm the oldest one in the active member in the Outboard Association. I originally come from Bethel, but I left there in 1943, and I've been racing since 1962. We used to take off from Circle. They used to call it Yukon 700 in 62.
Mo Samuelson, crew member and owner of Slow-Mo's Kayak 2. That was turned out to be the eventual winner of the 1978 Yukon 800 riverboat race. Talking to Don Thomas, the official timekeeper for the Yukon 800. Don, how did you get the job?
I work with a bunch of the racers here that race with the Fairbanks Outboard Society, and they asked me one time if I would like to help out, and I said, sure, I'd like to help out, and then it's quite an experience. I'm really enjoying this.
What are your duties?
Basically, I'm to time them in to Galena and then back to Fairbanks, and I do inspect the boats to make sure that they have all the equipment that is required by the club to make this race.
Do you have to pretty well stay on the banks of the Yukon River here in Galena, and then back in Fairbanks you have to serve vigil there too?
Yeah, this is right, and when we first got down here, when everybody else was warming up, Ollie Anderson and myself were both out on the banks when it's pouring down rain, so we know what it is to be cold on the river of the Yukon.
How cold does it get? And how do you dress for it?
I brought a lot of rain gear down. We had rain pants and a rain coat, and Ollie brought down a parka and a rain slicker, so we were fairly warm, and they finally built a fire for us to keep warm, but it was a little nippy out there. I'd say it was a typical winter day here in Galena, and the people were saying winter's coming.
On June 24th.
They say winter starts here June 21st. As soon as a long day is over, it starts winter. I'd say right now that these people down here, they show us a pretty good time, and they all come around and they help the boat drivers out, and a lot of them have let the boat drivers stay in their houses and stuff like this. And of course, we're interviewing this in a warm-up shack, and we're all getting warm now and eating a little food, so it'll be a much more enjoyable trip back now that we're warm and fed.
You don't know me, where I live, my tracks may soon go everywhere, because there ain't no other place for them to go. Where I dwell outside of now, for me that's really hard to say, like sometimes I'm not really sure I even know. What's the difference being different when it's difference now than looks alike? You say I'm changing, I'm not sure that's wrong. It's just the center line on this highway runs up my banter neck, and I feel somehow that it's natural to be gone. What crazy patterns do we follow, sitting knee to knee upon some riverbank somewhere at supper time? The evening air is moving like molasses towards the sticky night so easy as I press your hand in mine. What's the difference being different when it's different now than it looks alike? You say I'm changing, I'm not sure that's wrong. Today it may be natural, sitting here discussing it, tomorrow just as natural to be gone.
We're now 1 minute away from the start of the return lap from Galena to Fairbanks along the Yukon River and then the Tanana River. 1 minute to go. Ollie Anderson is standing poised with the flare gun. The boats are now out on the Yukon River, cruising, getting ready for an imaginary starting line. They will all be leaving at the same time on the wide expanse of the Yukon River. We're less than 1 minute away from the return lap. We should be in Fairbanks by 11 o'clock. It's now almost 4 a.m. here in Galena, Alaska. Ollie Anderson is ready. 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ollie Anderson has started the flare. This is dropping into the Yukon, and they are off. The boats are now going down the Yukon River. Several boats are starting very rapidly. Others are not moving along. And Del Hayward is taking the lead, and number 44 is moving away more rapidly than the others and has the head start now. Going down the Yukon River, we should be having the first boat into Fairbanks by about 11 o'clock, a little before 11 o'clock, maybe 10:30 Fairbanks time. We now have the last boat taking off, the Ruby Yacht from Fairbanks, a boat that's already been disqualified from the race because it had to take on gasoline a little bit upriver. They're going along for the ride. They're not in a competitive stance. We still have one boat moving out slowly in Fairbanks, in Galena, not yet moving along very well. We can't read the number from here. It's a white boat. Jerry Woods is now moving out slowly, and we see 1, 2, 3, 4 cluster now of five leading the way down the Yukon River, and then another cluster of three boats. And we have two more moving out very slowly. Jerry Woods' boat, the Ruby Yacht, which has already been disqualified, is having a little bit of trouble getting going. And that's the way it is in Galena, Alaska, 4 a.m. under a very cloudy sky, with rain threatening but not falling at the moment.
I'm a moving man with the necessary urge. Daylight's free, so's the freedom surge. Move over, grab a hold, and come along, babe. Move over, grab a hold, and come along. I'll take you with me if your engine runs, but don't bother me, baby, if you can't come. Move over, grab a hold, and come along, babe. Move over, grab a hold, and come along. Plane or bus, train or car, wherever it is, it's not too far. Move over, grab a hold, and come along, baby. Move over, grab a hold, and come along. Come on, baby, take my hand. Those who
who are scared out of the also-ran. Move over, grab a hold, and come along, babe. Move over, grab a hold, and come along. With Bobby and Joni singing so bright, who needs a compass with all of that light? Move over, grab a hold, and come along, babe. Move over, grab a hold, and come along. There's a whole new world to build out there. Let's go see it and find out where. Move over, grab a hold, and come along, babe. Move over, grab a hold, and come along. White man, black man, yellow man, red, all gonna do what Lincoln said. Move over, grab a hold, and come along, babe. Move over, grab a hold, and come along. I'm a moving man with the necessary urge. Daylight's free, so the freedom surge. Move over, grab a hold, and come along, babe. Move over, grab a hold, and come along.
I'm standing on the bank of the Chena River in Fairbanks. It's a little past 11:30. With expectation, looking at the bend around which should come any minute now the winner of the 1978 Yukon 800. And that should be the boat driven by Bill Page with Mo Samuelson, crew. Ollie Anderson, the official ender of the race, is standing ready, posing with her checkered flag at the finish line in Pike's Landing in Fairbanks. It is the start and the finish of the longest boat race in the United States, if not the world. And now a horn has just sounded a little bit upriver to indicate to the spectators here at Pike's Landing that Mo Samuelson in Slow Mo 1 is coming in to the finish line. We're standing in the finish line. Ollie Anderson's with her checkered flag poised. You can hear the crowd noise, and that's it. The Yukon 800 is now won.
Pastorio, paso fuente, siempre te encuentro lavando los colores de tu cara. Si vas a la fuente, no bebas el agua que la envenenaron, tus ojos serán.
Joan Baez in Spanish and I Pass a River. Earlier we heard Peter Lafarge singing Move Over, Grab a Hold, and John Hartford, Natural to Be Gone. Before that, the 49ers song from Folkways Records. Bill Page captain, Mo Samuelson, and Eric Adamson crew guided the Slow Mo's Kayak 2 to victory in a total elapsed time of 14 hours, 53 minutes, and 32 7/78 seconds. At first, Page hadn't known he'd won. He didn't know that the leader into Galena, Ed Gustafson, had suffered mechanical problems and had to drop out of the race.
When did you first find out that you'd won?
Well, I kept asking. I said, what about Gus? And then I guess he's the one who told me. He said Gus was out of it. This is Gus's boat, the one he built. He sold to Mo Samuelson. First boat always seems to have the brakes. We hit two barges coming up. No, just the wake, and then there was a shortcut. So we left them out in the side, and then two of them that way. One of them was going around the bend, and we took it across the shallows. But going down, there was four barges, and we hit them all.
Some of the racers tell me that when you hit the Yukon coming back, that you start hallucinating. Did you have any of this tonight?
There's a certain cast of the sky on the water. You look ahead, and you see things, because there's a reflection off it, and you keep looking, it disappears.
That's your song.
That's from the Nootka tribe in British Columbia. Sounds a little bit like the Southeast Alaska singing and dancing. Here's a special message now from Alaska Legal Services. Superior Court Judge Victor Carlson has announced a hearing on July 21st for 1978 at 9 a.m. The hearing will occur in the Courtroom 2 in Anchorage, in the court building there, to determine whether to accept a tentative agreement in the Ungayak case. The Ungayak case started about a year and a half ago, according to Alaska Legal Services Incorporated. At that time, certain persons eligible for food stamps filed a class action suit against officials of the Department of Health and Social Services. The persons who brought the suit said the state failed to tell the public of the food stamp program's benefits and requirements and failed to make these benefits easily available. On March 28th of this year, Judge Carlson found that the state did violate the law. After a series of hearings, both sides reached an agreement. Here are some of the terms of the agreement. All fee agents whom the state hires must be completely trained by the 1st of September. Number two, villages which do not have their own fee agents must be visited by an eligibility worker or trained fee agent at least once every 3 months or once every 6 months for Aleutian Chain villages. Number three, if a fee agent leaves a community, the state must replace him or her and send an eligibility worker or trained fee agent within 60 days, 30 days if at all possible. Anyone who has lost benefits because of the delay is entitled to get his or her benefits restored. Number four, people from places with no food stamp offices who ask for assistance must be sent applications for food stamps and instructions on how to use them. Number five, if people cannot go to food stamp offices in their communities, the state must arrange to go to the person's homes to interview them and to bring them food stamp applications. The state will distribute posters giving the location and the phone number of the nearest welfare office to every store that accepts food stamps. Number seven, the state will publish newspaper advertisements and record public service announcements on the benefits and requirements of food stamp programs every 90 days, and the state will translate these announcements into native languages when necessary. These are some of the agreements reached in the tentative settlement of the Ungayak case. This message is from the Alaska Legal Services Corporation on the hearings to be held on the Ungayak case and on food stamp requirements. This hearing will be held in the Anchorage Courthouse at 9 a.m. on July 21st. That concludes Potlatch for this week. I'm Jeff Kennedy. Thanks for listening.
Potlatch came to you from KUAC in Fairbanks. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting gave some of the money to produce this program.
From the University of Alaska, this has been a KUAC production.